The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
So I guess we have our candidate for the Democrat Party in 2020. That's right. We had a nice little speech given the other day. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because I think it's a lot of BS. But, you know, did you get to see the Golden Globes? You know, the foreign press awards that are usually platforms for half-witted actors and actresses. They spew out all their progressivism to impressionable viewers. Yeah, I've got a wife, so it was on our TV, whether I liked it or not. And of course, Seth Meyers, you know, he took some shots at Hollywood sexual predators, which, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was pretty funny. He took a little shot at Harvey Weinstein, and it was telling that those same people in the crowd that booed Seth Meyers' joke about Harvey Weinstein was also the ones who were a part of the big virtue signaling of the event, where they just went through the remaining hours of the show just talking about the Me Too movement and blowing up that whole thing. And I told you a few shows back, if you've listened to me on a regular basis, that this Me Too movement will be hijacked. It will be taken over by third wave feminism. It was actually not really started that way, but it was kind of taken over in its inception by third wave feminism, but not to the degree that we've seen it. And it's going to get to that point. But we really, I mean, some of the things that Seth Meyers said was pretty telling, like when he was talking about how Hollywood doesn't look at themselves as being elitist because, you know, they employ other people, you know, the working people, those who are the everyman, because, you know, they hire makeup artists and hairdressers. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, your hairdresser that you hire doesn't get the salary that my good friend down at Great Clips gets, okay? The haircuttery person, yeah, they're making, you know, some tips and what have you. They're not making a couple mil living in California doing your hair, doing your makeup. But, you know, the Hollywood wants us to believe that they're not in their own echo chamber, that they're not sitting there with, you know, glazed over actors that look like ex-hippies, one who looked like Ace Frehley they gave an award to with his little shades, his little blade shades, like Oakley blades or whatever on. I don't even know who that guy was. But I had to sit through this debacle and this just repugnant, just filled with self-aggrandizing and backslapping. And it's always just painful for me because I don't even care if I meet a star in person. You know, when I played music, we always laughed because there was quite a few famous people I met, you know, big names in music. And people I know are like, oh, what did you think about that when you met this person or that person? I'm like, they're no different than me. They just happen to make it. They're a person just like you or I. They just happen to attain the success that they fought for and that they slaved over. Good for them. I'm not going to sit there and act like this is a freaking god. But that's what we deal with Hollywood. And of course, it all boiled down to the big event. And when the show started and they said that the big award, whatever, was going to be given to Oprah, I guess it's sort of like a lifetime achievement award or what have you. That's when I looked at my wife and I said, oh, there you go. This is what's setting the stage. Because really, is there a point that Oprah needed to be awarded with something? I mean, is there anything that she's done recently that makes everyone go, yeah, I think Oprah needs to be lionized. I think Oprah needs to be set up on a platform above everybody and given an award because she's done something great. I can't think of anything. What did she do, a movie recently or something? So they had her on there, and I fully expected this to be what it became. And of course, she did her speech. And she was sure to fill her speech with examples of civil rights movement issues. You know, the lady in the 40s who was beaten and gang raped and almost left for dead that Rosa Parks ended up representing. And that was the fight against what's now the Me Too movement. Only that really didn't have anything to do with the Me Too movement. I mean, when we're talking about Harvey Weinstein, we're talking about Matt Lauer. Even if you want to go the route of Roy Moore, by the way, we're still waiting for those accusers of Roy Moore to come out and start some civil lawsuits. We're waiting for that. But anyways, if you wanted to go down that road, none of the issues that had to do with whether or not somebody could excel in the workplace, whether or not somebody would be given access to jobs like Harvey Weinstein and the casting couch, that casting couch that we've known has existed for decades now, nobody can thread the needle that any of that had to do with civil rights, with race. So why would Oprah throw that in there? Well, it's kind of to add legitimacy to her viewpoint, paint a picture darker than it really is. And to the low information crowd, they're going to be wowed by her historical references that they weren't aware of because they don't remember being taught that incident in school. Or it doesn't automatically recall in their mind, and it makes her seem a little bit more poignant when she's pulling up more well-read history that they don't know. And, you know, they're automatically going to assume that her points are extremely important. Her example has absolutely nothing to do with Hollywood casting couch culture that has been perpetuated since Hollywood's inception. I mean, it goes back to the, you know, I mean, it goes decades back. It's amazing how she was able to thread that that needle. I mean, her example may have been, you know, an example of a gang rape, but the real intent was obviously based on the racism at the time. I mean, that's why they attacked this lady. Her reasoning for adding this into her speech was to frame an oppressed underclass, to equivocate it to what happened with, you know, the black movement, the civil rights movement of the black population back in that time. But I assumed women's suffrage accomplished all of this. I mean, didn't we, you know, fix all of this? You know, right to vote, liberation, women's liberation, right to choose. I mean, we're down the line. And, you know, I mean, my wife makes more of a salary than I do. I've worked under bosses who were female that have done well. I've seen people like Meg Whitman. How about Carly Fiorina? If you want to talk about somebody that should run for office who has been a successful individual in her own life. But no, we have to paint the narrative of the oppressed women. You know, we can't come to a resolution and solve all of these issues because then those industries die. NAACP, now, all of that stuff dies. The money drives up. The activism motivation slows to a crawl and can't be exploited for other reasons. But, I mean, let's think about the Oprah campaign. CNN obviously believes it. I mean, CNN, Brian Stelter, man. Apparently there's this term called a stan. And I've seen this on Twitter. I didn't know what the heck a stan was. But apparently it's a means something like a fanatical fan. It's like a stalker fan, so it's a stan. And of course, I'm thinking Brian Stelter, this guy, he's an Oprah stan. I mean, he tweeted out, she promotes Weight Watchers. He loves McDonald's, talking about Trump. Here's my look at Winfrey and Trump from tonight's show out front on CNN. High-powered friends think Democrats have a weak bench, but they have a possibility with Oprah. She's not saying she's in, but she's definitely not ruling it out either. Officially, her rep is declining to comment. Who wrote Oprah's speech? What will Gail say? Does Oprah really want to subject herself to this? Questions and answers in tonight's reliable sources. You know, I mean, he goes on to say, Gail King confirms Oprah is thinking about running. Quote, I do think she's intrigued by the idea. I do think that. I don't think at this point she is actually considering it, but listen, there are people who have said they want to be her campaign manager. Of course, he's kind of shown that really she doesn't want to run, but hey, who cares about that? And listen to Hollywood just gush on and on about what an Oprah presidency would be like.
Have you been able to recover from Oprah's speech last night? I haven't been able to recover. I'm still flying over it. God bless her. She's been amazing. And if she runs, I'm voting for you, Oprah.
You know, I said it in one of my writer's rooms today that if Oprah Winfrey actually was serious, I would mortgage all my houses. I would give all the money to the campaign. I would literally quit my job and work for her full time. I mean, I would have pride in my country again because I feel like we would have the potential of like a great unifier.
Without getting too political, I just want to, I'm curious to see what would happen if that happened. Sure, that's, why not? She's got the credentials, man.
When I heard her speak last night, I said, this is the kind of human being that can change the dynamic of the world. She was so powerful and so moving and such a leader.
You know she's got my vote. She's had my vote since the 80s. Like, what took her so long? I mean, what's taking everybody so long to catch on to this? Like, are we really just discovering that Oprah should be president? Really? Are we really just discovering that?
And, of course, we had NBC tweet out a photo that night basically stating she's our president. I mean, what did it say again? Nothing but respect for our future president. Hashtag Golden Globes in a picture of Oprah Winfrey. Now, she gets into the race. What will happen? You know, NBC turned around and corrected that. They said yesterday a tweet about the Golden Globes and Oprah Winfrey was sent by a third-party agency for NBC Entertainment in real time during the broadcast. It is in reference to a joke made during the monologue and not meant to be a political statement. We have since removed the tweet, but yeah, whatever. But what would happen if Oprah ran? I mean, I'm seeing clips and statements being brought back up that I forgot about, like Bill Kristol talking about Oprah back in October 9th, 2002 on her show where she was pro-regime change in Iraq. Is Oprah a neocon? Is she a never-Trumper? I think she is. But Trump would have had her as a vice president. And let's not forget, this Me Too movement falls flat when you find out that Oprah Winfrey was really close with Harvey Weinstein. When really close with Bill Clinton, had him on the show. In fact, had the show Oprah and Bill Clinton. It wasn't just Oprah sits down with Bill Clinton. It's Oprah and Bill Clinton. You know, how about all of the different things that she's brought out, all of the people she's promoted that basically have turned out to be a bunch of frauds? I mean, she is notorious for having people on the show that ended up being fraudulent. And the Federalist points this out. She invited Suzanne Summers onto her show to peddle hormone injections and absurd vitamin regimen. Sounds like the perfect candidate for the party of science. She also brought on Jenny McCarthy to peddle the anti-vaccination scare for autism. And one of her favorite guests has been Dr. Christiane Northrup, who has written about how she used to use tarot cards to help diagnose her own illness. Obama promoted The Secret, which mostly seems like a rehash of The Power of Positive Thinking, but also includes this. The book that Oprah urges everyone to live by teaches us all diseases can be cured with the power of thought alone. Quote, the question frequently asked is, when a person is manifested in disease in the body temple, can it be turned around through the power of right thinking? The answer is obviously yes. Of course, there's Dr. Oz, who's had issues. Ross Pomeroy from Real Clear Science has documented some of the magic and miracle things that Oz promotes. And then, you know, you have to think about some of her statements on racism. Yeah, in theory, the culture of racism will fully be realized if those who are involved with it die out, but when you say it like this, it doesn't really roll off the tongue in such a way that is inviting.
Still, and there's a whole generation, I say this, you know, I said this, you know, for apartheid South Africa, I said this for my own, you know, community in the South. There are still generations of people, older people, who were born and bred and marinated in it, in that prejudice and racism, and they just have to die.
Yeah, they should all die. That's what Oprah thinks. Sounds really compassionate. There's some forgiveness in her voice, and she must have learned that forgiveness while sitting in Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church next to Obama, because she attended it too. So I think in a an Oprah presidential campaign may not be the best idea.
But my vajayjay is painting.
But for Trump, you know, we gotta worry a little bit. Because, unfortunately, Oprah could possibly win. If you guys are looking at the Breitbart effect that's happening, the Breitbart Bannon effect, Breitbart listeners are pissed. And those were actually some of the hardcore people that propped up Trump and put him over the edge. Because he's not standing firm on DACA. He's not standing firm on a completion of a wall within a timely manner. He's doing some things that they feel. And this isn't me talking. I'm talking about what I'm hearing. They're not really happy. They feel like they've been sold a bill of goods. And although Bannon will proclaim that he has some sort of success behind the Trump presidency, Trump himself is now kind of doing what we Cruz fans thought he would do in the very beginning and make deals with the establishment. He's trying to placate the establishment. And, you know, that's one of the first tweets I put out about the whole Trump candidacy. He's going to make the best deals. And if those deals are with Mitch McConnell, he's going to make them. Now, we got some great stuff at the end of the year, so I'm not bagging on what Trump has done. Don't get me wrong. But what I'm worried about is if he loses his hardcore base with the Breitbart scene, and then he turns around and placates to the Never Trump side, the Rhino establishment, those people don't care what he accomplishes. They still will not support him. Mitt Romney, Evan McMullen, Bill Kristol, they still hate everything he does. Jonah Goldberg, Noah Rothman, all those people that, you know, just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Trump. He's not going to win them over no matter what he accomplishes because they feel he's destroying conservatism and sullying the idea of conservatism. So when you have a split where your base that just was 100% behind you no matter what you did, you could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't matter, they're disillusioned, and then the people you are actually looking to please don't want anything to do with you no matter what you deliver upon, and you go up against somebody like a cult of personality like Oprah, we could be in for some real issues. Now, granted, we might, you know, luck out and the economy grows beyond belief and tax reform, you know, puts more money in the pockets of the individual and the working person and, you know, people like myself. That may add some, you know, some weight to a Trump reelection, but we really got to wait and see. And of course, as we know through the election cycle, it's too early to start talking about that. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. So in regards to President Trump and whether or not he's killing his base and Oprah, whether there's going to be a Winfrey administration or not, which seems pretty ridiculous, I want to get into some other things that are showing that Trump is killing his base and putting himself in a position that is really going to have him on the ropes for the midterms. And we went a little long in the first segment, so we're going to make this segment just a little bit quicker. So stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
All right, let's finish up this Oprah presidency nonsense and the exploitation of the Me Too movement that's being bolstered at the Golden Globes. You know, like, Marky Mark is out there making more money, him and his funky bunch of cash, you know, than his little co-host who's only getting $1,000 or whatever. And let's get into re-examining some of Trump's moves in light of his recent positions in just a few, because what he's doing would not only usher in a President Winfrey, but also a President Timberlake. Yeah, Justin Timberlake. I mean, first, as predicted by me, the Me Too movement will be weaponized towards other progressive targets, one recently being Christianity. Yes, a tweet was shared over whether or not evangelical Christianity is a roadblock to the Me Too movement and Time's Up movements. And of course, Time's Up was started by Oprah. It stems from a recent confession by a megachurch pastor to his congregation about an incident that happened when he was about 20-something as a youth pastor with a 17-year-old church-going girl. And I'm not going to go into whether who was right, wrong, whether it should or shouldn't have happened, because I wasn't there. I don't know the details. And, you know, there's so many variables that could, you know, that can occur. But apparently he was driving her home, pulled off the side of the road, asked her for oral sex, and she provided, and she thought he loved her. So obviously there wasn't a threat of violence or coercion, and she consented to a certain degree. And we don't know if they flirted many times before that or if there was any attraction between them before the incident. All of those pertinent details were never mentioned, but I'm not excusing one side over the other. But in the 1998 time frame that this happened, you know, that was the era where liberals were telling us, BJs, they're not sex. That's not sex. You know, whatever a president and his young intern does behind closed doors is in the privacy of the Oval Office is simply between them and his wife. And we need to stop dwelling on this and get back to working for the American people, you perv, Kenneth Starr. Remember all that? It's around that same time period. And, you know, they wasted millions of taxpayer dollars over an investigation into Clinton's affairs. That's what was always being said. Never mind Russia, you know, that we're doing it now. I mean, it seems to be standard fare. So the Me Too movement is livid that this pastor told his congregation and gave him, and the congregation gave him a standing ovation. And that's how it's framed. Never mind the fact that the standing ovation was in regards to a public confession made in front of the congregation who was extending forgiveness for their sins. I mean, this is extended to all sins. There's not a gray area in sin. You know, a lie is as bad as a murder is as bad as a rape. I mean, that's the way it works. That doesn't mean there aren't consequences for the sins that they commit on earth. I mean, he may be stepping down as a pastor. His book deal was dropped. God still forgives. This isn't, as the tweet I'm about to read, some form of elite judgmental evangelical exceptionalism. And this isn't as to act as though what transpired was okay either. I mean, she was 17. Again, I'm not going to justify any of this with the same consensual arguments that Roy Moore supporters were using that the left scoffed at. You know, oh, age of consent is 16 in Alabama back in that day. But, you know, never mind the fact that leftist publications are tweeting about an independent film about a gay relationship between a 14-year-old and an older guy and saying that's not pedophilia because it was set in Italy where the age of consent was 14. But the fact that Christianity gets broadly brushed against these incidents is, in my opinion, pretty daggone absurd. So this tweet actually wraps up with Rachel Held Evans. This person wrote some book about doubting Christianity and says, this week, first, James Dobson encouraged Christians to fast and pray for protection for a serial sex abuser in the name of Donald Trump. Second, when a megachurch pastor's criminal sexual assault was exposed, he received a standing ovation from his congregation. Three, one of Roy Moore's victims' houses burned down. Well, James Dobson was just praying to whoever would be the president. I mean, he's done it for Obama. He's done it for George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. I mean, you pray for the president. Yeah, it happens to be Donald Trump, and he's probably more favored towards him because of his protection of Christianity, whether or not Trump is or not. But you can't fault James Dobson for wanting us to pray for him. I've already told you about the megachurch pastor and Roy Moore's victim's house being burned down. That wasn't even somebody directly related to the campaign or from his church. But anyways, going on, all of these stories point to why I'm sadly pessimistic about a Me Too-style cultural shift in evangelical Christianity and, to an extent, the broader church. I'm pessimistic because of the deadly combination of patriarchy, oh, I love that term, as discussed recently, evangelical exceptionalism, which understands the world or the culture to be filled with darkness and sin, teeming with people who are lost, and evangelicalism and evangelicals to be the sole bearers of the light and the countercultural path to salvation. White evangelicals perceive the world to struggle with racism and sexual immorality, but not themselves, which is complete BS. But anyways, because of this, it's rare to see serious efforts made at examining the ways racism and toxic masculinity, patriarchy, are embedded in evangelical culture. You see this so clearly in the fact that Andy Savage's church, the, you know, pastor that we were talking about, rejects LGBT people, yet gives their abusive pastor a standing ovation. And that's where That's where I just get lost on these people, because it's always about the patriarchy, and it's always about taking a movement and using it for something else. You know, it's going to be a battering ram for other things politically and culturally, and things that will go along with their political stance. You know, one of the things that I ran into was there was a tweet that I read not too long ago. It was a poll that was being conducted. And with this poll, it was amazing because it showed a light onto what is really kind of, you know, one of the reasons why you see this attack from the Me Too movement on Christianity. And this poll basically says, today is the birthday of Simone de Beauvoir, a French writer, activist, and feminist whose contributions have been important to feminist theory and the feminist cause. Which of these perspectives do you think is the most viable to achieve a real women's liberation? Intersectional feminism? Well, at the time, they got 23% of a vote. Radical feminism, 4% of the vote. Socialist feminism, 71% of the vote. And others, which was 2%. Well, obviously, feminist theory seems similar to critical theory. And in fact, feminist theory basically states, this is the basic principles of feminist theory, the relationship between men and women is almost always unequal and oppressive. The extent of inequality and oppressiveness has varied greatly. All societies have been patriarchal. Patriarchy is a system in which males dominate females. All major social institutions have been characterized by male dominance, the economy, political systems, family, and religion. That's from Colorado University, the University of Colorado. Well, I basically thought it sounds very similar to critical theory, only it's the liberation of dominance towards a gender. Because critical theory designates several generations of German philosophers and social theorists and Western European Marxist tradition, as known as the Frankfurt School. According to these theorists, a critical theory may be distinguished from a traditional theory according to a specific practical purpose. A critical theory is to extend that it seeks human emancipation from slavery and acts as liberating influence to create a world which satisfies the needs of and power. And that's the thing, is that's what we were seeing with the statues. That's what we're seeing with history being rewritten. That's all from critical theory. And they're Marxist movements. That is the underlining thread between them all. And so when you see it being used and set up against Christianity, it's kind of funny when you hear how Oprah talks about Christianity.
The panel has been discussing the spirituality and the forces of God, but I also believe that there are two forces that are here with us, that we do have our God that we can depend on, but there's also a power of darkness that we do need to be aware of. And that's where the choice is.
Do you believe that you can choose between one or the other?
Most absolute definitely.
Yeah.
Now,
Marianne Williamson says in her book, Return to Love, that we're always walking in the direction of one or the other, that all of your actions in life, either you're moving toward the darkness or you're moving toward the light.
That's right.
She calls it fear and love. There's this wonderful book called Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, it's a gorilla talking, but anyway, it talks about, one of the points it brings out is one of the mistakes that human beings make is believing that there is only one way to live.
That's
and
right.
That we don't accept that there are diverse ways of being in the world, that there are millions of ways to be
then
a human being. And many ways, no, but many paths to what you call God.
That
and
is
her
crazy.
Path might be something else, and when she gets there, she might call it the light. But her loving and her kindness and her generosity brings her, if it brings her to the same point that it brings you, it doesn't matter whether she called it God along the way or not.
And I guess the danger that could be in that, I mean, it sounds great on the onset, but if you really look at both sides,
possibly be just one way. What about Jesus? What about Jesus?
There is one way, and only one way, and
there
that is through Jesus.
There couldn't possibly be, with
because
the millions
you
of
say
people in
there
the world.
Isn't.
There couldn't possibly be.
Because you say, you intellectualize it and say there isn't. If you
no.
don't believe that, you're all buying into the lie.
But that makes you right.
Do you think that if you are somewhere on the planet...
No.
Where are you? If you're somewhere on the planet and you never hear the name of Jesus, you never hear the name of Jesus, but yet you live with a loving heart, you lived as Jesus would have had you to live, you lived for the same purpose that Jesus came to the planet to teach us all, but you are in some remote part of the earth and you never heard the name of Jesus. You cannot get to heaven, you think?
And that is covered in the scriptures, too. People are talked about
that. Truly. God knows the heart.
Does God care about your heart, or God care about if you call his son Jesus?
Well, you know, Oprah, God, Jesus cannot come back until that gospel is preached in the four corners of this earth. So, you know, figure it out.
Okay, I can't get into a religious argument with you.
It's not religion, Oprah.
I can't get into a religious argument with you, John.
Yeah, that's right. She thinks you can get to heaven any which way, and that Christianity's view of heaven through salvation through Christ, you know, is, it's just garbage. Because that's what Flyover Nation will support, and a President Oprah. So I don't think you're going to see her run. There's a lot of other skeletons in her closet. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
It may not much has actually changed here in terms of your positions.
No, I think it's changed. I think my positions are going to be what the people in this room come up with. I am very much reliant on the people in this room. I know most of the people on both sides. I have a lot of respect for the people on both sides. And what I approve is going to be very much reliant on what the people in this room come to me with. I have great confidence in the people. If they come to me with things that I'm not in love with, I'm going to do it because I respect them. Thank you all very much.
So right there, what you just heard from Donald Trump in his meeting, that he's going to sign whatever anybody puts on his desk, regardless of what it is, that's kind of concerning, because his stance on the wall was the biggest selling point. That's the reason why Jeb Bush got beat down by his act of love that Donald Trump is now saying he needs to put into the DACA bill, whatever's provided to him, an act of love. I mean, remember his little statement back in the beginning of the primaries with Chuck Todd?
The executive order gets rescinded. One good thing
you'll
about...
You'll rescind that one, too?
One good thing
you'll
about...
You'll rescind the Dream Act executive
you're gonna
order.
You're going to have to.
DACA.
We have to make a whole new set of standards. And when people come in, they have
so
to come
gonna
in...
You're going to split up families.
Chuck,
you're going to deport children.
Chuck, no. We're going to keep the families together. We have to keep the families together.
But you're going
to
keep them together
out. But they have to go.
What if they have no place to go?
We will work with them. They have to go. Chuck... We either have a country or we don't have a country. Either we have a country or not.
How do you do it?
The cost of doing it. Look at the cost of what we have right now.
The cost of doing it.
Let me ask you this. Do you think
I understand that, but how do you do it?
Do you think there's tremendous cost for the illegals that are in here right now?
Of course there's cost to it.
Okay, tremendous. Do you think there's tremendous crime being committed by illegals?
No, there's definitely evidence that it's happened. It's
tremendous. Far greater than what they do. And you see it all over just last night. All over. We will do it, and we will expedite it so people can come back in.
It's still not clear.
Chuck, it'll work out so well. You will be so happy. In 4 years, you're going to be interviewing me, and you're going to say, what a great job you've done, President Trump.
Yeah, that's what he said. You know, if Trump signs some sort of amnesty bill, you're looking at a one-term president. This will be his one and only term. And it will be the reason we get an Oprah presidency. Not because of Oprah, obviously, like we said earlier. It's because he's killing the base that got him there. He's pandering to a wing of the GOP that, no matter what he does, will never accept him because of how he's rebranding their form of conservatism into Trumpism. And this wing of the GOP will shun him completely because of how they feel he's hurt the party. I mean, truth be known, conservatism and the GOP are dead to me anyways. I don't pretend to think it needs saving. But the left, they despise whomever the GOP president is, whether it's Trump, Cruz, Rubio, heck, even Kasich. So attracting them is a lost cause. And if there's no MAGA base because you pissed them off, there's no GOP establishment support. The Never Trumpers will never turn. No across the aisle support of the left either. Who actually remains at that point? If a 2018 midterm sweep comes through blue, you're going to see more Democrat policies put into place by President Trump. And the only hope will be for an economic boom, fatter paychecks from less tax withholdings. That's going to kill any impeachment calls. That's going to help support his reelection. But, you know, I had some people say, well, he ran on supporting DACA. It's almost in every immigration speech he had. He said it a bunch of times to where I'm saying he didn't say that. And I'm not saying that he did when he actually got into the vagaries of it at certain points. but that's why I didn't vote for him. His MAGA base believed that he wanted to build the wall, and that's what, you know, he meant. But anyone who supports DACA on the GOP side is going to lose. Rubio learned that firsthand. You know, I mean, that's one of the things we have to really concern ourselves with. You know, ultimately, it is up to Congress to do the job. You don't do it through executive action like Obama did, so I will give Trump that, that he is making it go through the proper channels. But do you have any confidence? I mean, into what Congress is going to do? I mean, the executive branch executing what the legislative branch decides to bring to the table, that's how it works. The problem is we can't have confidence in what the legislative branch is going to provide to us. So for Donald Trump to say that he's going to sign whatever, it's whatever's good or bad, whether he does likes it or not, it's a bit concerning. I mean, Jeff Flake, Eric Menendez, they're out there getting things together on this DACA deal. I mean, some people are going to say, well, you know, it's 3D Chinese checkers, 8D Parcheesi. But if he pulls a plot twist at the final moment and says, yeah, this sucks, and he's basically uncovered all of the people who were for amnesty and he rips it up and flips the script, then he's going to gain all his support back instantly. But we have to start thinking of the wins that we were so ecstatic about recently. I mean, were those legitimately wins that we were done for the intention of promoting conservatism? I mean, remember the tax cuts. Yeah, bringing the corporate tax cut rate down is amazing, and it's going to bring business back, which is going to hire, which is going to cause more economic growth. But it really, if you boil it down, it only helped the C corporations, the publicly traded ones. There was no help for those that were in the S corporation LLC wings of business. And I've talked about that. Yeah, the standard deduction, additional child tax credits, that's going to help the middle class. But the tax reform bill did nothing to lower these top businesses that aren't formed in the C corporation manner. I mean, like I said, it's still good because lowering it, it's going to make us competitive globally. But that may not have been a conservative move in nature. We just may be getting the residual effects. You know, that makes us happy, but was that the reasoning? I mean, think about the regulations that were cut. You know, we can sit here all day and go, well, he cut regulations. Do you know which ones he cut? I don't. He cut 22 for every one, but he could have cut regulations that would also fall in line with the tax cuts for C corporations, the corporate regulations that were keeping them from going back to America, even without the tax cuts. Who knows? And if that was the case, yes, I'm a limited government pro-business individual, and I would cheer any deregulation, but would that be a conservative intention? And, I mean, come on, Jerusalem. Every president has recognized Jerusalem as the capital, said they were going to, and never followed through. We don't even know if that's going to happen under Trump. We assume it is, because he was so bold about it, but we don't really know. Yeah, Gorsuch was a good pick from what we see, but we don't really know if he's going to turn into a John Roberts. I mean, look at that. Obamacare repeal was a complete failure. So how can we be confident we'll get something pro-American or pro-Constitution out of these immigration reform deals? And listen to Ann Coulter and Lou Dobbs talking about what happened with this deal.
Anything. He agreed with DIFI. Yes, we'll have a standalone Dreamer bill, just granting everybody amnesty, and we'll get to that comprehensive immigration stuff later. No, Lou, this is a disaster. It was the lowest day of his presidency.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more about the difficulty of the day. Let me put it that way. I am an absolute committed supporter of this president. I am also absolutely, without question, and unreservedly a champion of his wall and making certain that we secure the borders before there's any talk with the... This was an assemblage of some of the worst lights of the Kennedy-McCain yes. Effort to create comprehensive immigration reform. And it reminded yes. everyone in Washington what you do when you don't have a solution is you expand the problem. They made it comprehensive. Vast.
Well,
and by the way,
and also,
still
it
no
seems as if
on it.
Trump, It seems, yes, but it seems as if Trump thinks he's going to get all this great press by giving the left everything they want. I promise you, he's not going to get good press from this. They're still going to say he has dementia. If anything, they have more arguments now with him jumping around and abandoning his base. His only hope is to be pedal to the metal, fulfill his promises, build the wall, end chain migration, and deport these dreamers who are, again, as I said last week, they ought to go before MS-13. They are just a Mexican Antifa.
That may be one
they
of
are the worst of the illegals.
You know, and you don't like the way they create so much much trouble. By the way, the average age of the so-called dreamers, the president himself refers to them as kids. They are far from it.
Corrected himself on that. That was actually one of the high moments of the press conference. I mean, every once in a while, I could go through and give you 30 seconds where he was great. But then the next answer is, I'll take the heat. It'll be comprehensive immigration reform.
Well, he did say that.
It's not disputing the Michael Wolff book.
Well, it is. The reason I don't like the Michael Wolff book is because it's filled with trash and fraud and fiction. And you know better than to use it as some sort of...
Yeah, I mean, Ann Coulter was blasting Trump. And she was the reason why he's in office. She was one of his biggest proponents. Jack Posobiec, he said, when Trump crowds chanted build the wall, it wasn't a suggestion. Well, of course. I mean, we knew. I've even said my 2-year anniversary of the tweet that said he will make good deals with the establishment, which is why I wanted Cruz. Cruz isn't going to make these deals is why I didn't support him. And so when you look at his flip-flopping on the FISA warrants that just happened, when you look at the fact that Jared Kushner is working with him on prison reform, I mean, I don't know what we're getting. And I don't know if the wins that we got around Christmas time that we should have been as happy about, because it wasn't directly because of conservatism. It was because of something else. And it just kind of fell into conservative ideology and we reaped the benefits. So these are things we have to think about, because we're still getting close to the midterm elections and we could end up with a President Oprah, a President Timberlake, a President Mark Cuban, a President Kanye West, who knows? I mean, all because of Trump destroying his base and kowtowing to an establishment that has no care for him whatsoever and leaving what little support he's going to have up against whoever is the contender in 2020. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter at Rants Out Loud. You can check out the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Play Music, TuneIn app, iHeartRadio, or get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel if you have a Roku device. Get it in your streaming store. Tune into the show on Talk America Radio on the Liberty Channel, Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m., Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Saturday evening at 10 p.m., and then on the Talk America Radio Justice Channel, Tuesday evening, 6 p.m., Saturday evening at 7 p.m., and Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Please donate to support the show if you'd like at patreon.com/Adrian Slade Show. You'll get exclusive early screenings of the show before they air on Talk America Radio and before they're made public. You also get free subscriber-only exclusives, additional quick rants, and Adrian Slade Music Matinee Podcast. We'll see you next time.